All right, welcome to the inaugural podcast on vanquishthefoe.com, new media outlet for the blog. We're going to try and put these podcasts out every so often so you can download your Cougar news and take it with you on the go and listen to it at your leisure. The first topic we're going to talk about is Jake Heaps. And starting off with this Utah game, a lot has been said about the Utah game, the decisions that were made by Coach Anai on the 4th-and-1, whether it was a good choice to do a play-action pass or whether we should have quarterback snuck it or, you know, whether we should just run a run play up the middle. But mainly focusing on the final drive there and the, I guess what some would call the conservative play calling at the end of the drive, three straight runs in the middle of the field to just set up a field goal rather than throwing some passes. And this is critical. This is something that I really want to talk about. Because what I don't think people realize is I've heard a lot of people saying, you know, Jake Heaps on that drive, he was 4 for 4, he had the hot hand, things were going good. Well, I think what people are failing to recognize is the drive before that, these two drives here are actually almost identical in everything except for the outcome. Both drives, okay, so the final drive of the game started at the 21-yard line. Okay, the drive before that started at the 19. So basically the same starting point there. At the 20, you got to drive the length of the field. Both drives took 15 plays, and both drives ended at the 25-yard line of Utah. Okay, so the only difference here is that we try to kick a field goal on both drives, right? And the drive before, the field goal was good from 42 yards right down the middle with plenty of leg. And obviously we all know how the second drive ended, the final drive of the game, with a blocked field goal, rather. But on those drives, the drive before Jake Heaps was only 5 for 9, okay? And in the last three passing attempts, okay, so the ball's already down. He had just thrown a pass to McKay Jacobson, which got us down to the 13-yard line. First and 10 from the 13, okay, going with the aggressive play calling that everybody wanted on the last drive, Jake Heaps is sacked for a 12-yard loss. All right, on the next play, we try to throw another pass, incomplete. On 3rd-and-22, what do we do? Throw another pass, incomplete. Okay, so now you fast forward to the final drive of the game. Final drive of the game in the exact same situation, 1st-and-10 from the 25. Okay, you got to imagine that a couple things are fresh on Coach Anai's mind and the coaching staff in general. All right, we just went down there. On our last drive, we're down in their territory. They pinned their ears back, brought the heat because they knew we were going to have to go for the end zone. And we got a big sack on Jake, which puts us behind the eight ball. And luckily, at that point, you know, we are still in field goal range at the 25. Okay, so now on this final drive of the game, if everyone, you know, who's calling for Coach Anai to call a pass play there, attack the end zone, bring the field, the ball closer for maybe a closer field goal, chip shot. I mean, you gotta understand that there's a lot of risk that goes into calling pass plays, and more so than just complete, incomplete, right? I mean, a sack is huge. A 12-yard sack, that killed a drive before. We were down at the 13-yard line. You got to think at the 13, you know, we ran a couple options or something like that. You know, maybe we score, but Coach and I tried to be a little more aggressive, go for some pass plays, and it killed us. So you're looking at this game right now and you're thinking, okay, we've got total control. Utah just used our last timeout. We can run the ball three straight times, leave no time on the clock for them, kick a field goal, walk away with the win. Mitch Payne is deadly accurate. The only question he's maybe had in his kicking career is how strong his leg is. But, I mean, from 40 yards, Mitch is good. He's already proven that on the day twice and another time from 34. Okay, so I think, I mean, it's the perfect situation. I was standing there in the stands. I was giddy as a schoolboy just saying, you know, we got another one from these guys at the last second. This is awesome. I was just loving it. We all know the result. And, all it came down to was a missed assignment. I mean, a guy came completely clean off the edge. And that has nothing to do with play calling. That has to do with, players doing what they're coached to do. And I had a little sick feeling in my stomach when I saw, you know, Marco Thorson running off the field because we had too many guys on the field. It just seemed like it wasn't a good start to a game-winning play that we didn't have everyone on cue. Now, I do got to say here that I've verified that Marco was actually the guy who was supposed to be on there. So it wasn't his fault. Don't blame him for the miscue. But in any case, I'll rest that Utah game. And let's go back and look at Jake and kind of I got some thoughts, you know, on the year. Going all the way back to spring ball and the preseason, you know, I took a lot of heat from people with some comments. You know, basically that my opinion was that we should redshirt Jake Heaps. I mean, everyone was calling for this guy to come in. He's the golden child, you know, come in here, start, and give BYU the best chance to win. And, you know, that he was going to be the savior of BYU football and the guy that takes us to the next level. And I think a lot of people took me wrong, friends and family included, in thinking that I was somehow against Jake. I was never against Jake Heaps. You know, I watched a lot of his high school film. Know he's very talented. Really excited to have him at BYU. My point in wanting him to redshirt was basically this, that we're looking at a year this season that was going to be, you know, a rebuilding year. We'd lost a lot of valuable players from the team before. A lot of question marks going into the year. And I just thought, you know, with all these young recruits, what better opportunity than to let him redshirt, gain some experience, adjust to the speed of college football and the intensity and the things that go wrong with the play calling, getting comfortable with the offense for Jake, and let these guys, you know, have four straight years together when they're a little more veteran. And anyone can look back, you know, hindsight's always 20/20, and look at the season and say, you know, what might have been, what we should have, what should have, could have, and whatnot. But I look back and I say, you know, look, we ended the year 6-6, okay? We beat a bunch of crappy teams at the end. We beat a really good SDSU team. We played just as good as against TCU as we have in the past couple years. So that's kind of a wash. And then we played really, really close with a Utah team that, we're probably better than, at least equal to, and it kind of showed in the game. But I look back and I say, you know, let's think for a minute that Riley Nelson didn't get hurt. And he was the starting quarterback from day one. Jake Heaps is redshirting. And we got James Lark backing up Riley Nelson. And I look back and I look at the games that we won and lost. And I say, you know, would we have won or lost those games with Riley Nelson? And honestly, you know, I think the results are the same. Obviously, we beat Washington with Riley and Jake. We lost the next four games. We beat SDSU. Although Jake had a pretty good game, you know, he threw a pick, but he was still 15 of 22 for 126 yards, quarterback rating of 107 against actually a really good pass efficiency defense. They're number 17 in the country in pass efficiency defense. But that game was really won on the ground. BYU rushed for 271 yards. We all know they controlled the clock for 45 minutes of the game. And that was really the deciding factor in the SDSU game. So could we have done that with Riley? I think we can. The game plan there was just to run the ball and pass just as needed to keep them honest. Then you go ahead and you look at the TCU. I mean, let's face it. Gary Patterson's defense is outsmarting BYU's offense for the third straight year. Max Hall had no better success than Jake Heaps. And, you know, so would Riley Nelson have made the difference in the game? No, he probably wouldn't have made the difference in the game. But, you know, they kind of got our number right now. So no difference there. And, I don't think that there's any reason why Riley Nelson wouldn't have won the games against Wyoming, UNLV, Colorado State, New Mexico. And, you know, the Utah game, I don't know how he would have fared in that game. But suffice it to say, you know, I still think we're a 6-6 team with Riley Nelson, and now we've got Jake Heaps for four straight years. And that's kind of really all I was getting at in the preseason. And, I mean, you guys have all seen, you know, late in the year as Jake has progressed and gotten a better feel for the offense and for the timing of college football and gotten more comfortable with everybody out there. He's learned to make some adjustments on his throws in terms of tempo and ball speed and whatnot, and you can see that the guy is going to be amazing. And I never doubted that for a second, that, you know, this guy is definitely very talented. I only wish that we had him for four more years instead of three now. because of what I've seen late in the year. And let's go back and look at kind of the work that he did do in the last few games here. Because I think I've heard a lot of comments, you know, for the Utah game that Coach Anai really kept the reins on Jake and didn't let him, you know, take control of the game, didn't cut him loose, didn't open up the whole playbook for him. I think we're kind of losing track of the BYU offense and the teams that we'd played previously. Like I said, aside from SDSU, you know, we played the number one pass efficiency defense in TCU, and it just wasn't a good story there. Two interceptions, passer rating of 58, you know, 14 of 30 for 91 yards. And then over the next four games, you know, Jake threw nine touchdowns and only one interception. You got to keep in mind, though, those pass efficiency defenses that he faced, Wyoming is 94 in the country, UNLV is 117, Colorado State 118, New Mexico 111. And you got to keep in mind also that in those games, okay, our team rushed for over 200 yards in each of those games. And so you look at the wins that we had at the end of the year, and it wasn't about the quarterback play. Although Jake did play well, our receivers started making more plays later in the year, especially against Colorado State and New Mexico. But you look at that, and we won those games on the strength of our run offense. And that brings to mind a question or a comment that I saw today. Someone said, you know, we need to get back to traditional BYU football of being basically a pass-happy offense. Pass first, run second. And I got to completely disagree with those comments. I remember in 2005, we came down to San Diego State and we got our butts kicked. Right after we had lost that close game to TCU, came down to a controversial call, but we come down to San Diego State and shoot, we had to throw the ball on about 80% of our plays. And I remember riding home with Coach Reynolds from the airport and him just saying, you know, a lot of people around BYU think that BYU has always been a passing school. And you got to keep in mind, Coach Reynolds has been around. He was around for a lot of the Lavelle Edwards era and through the Croton years and obviously now with Coach Menhall. So he's been around. He's been around the BYU offense for a long, long time. And I don't think anyone understands it, the offense and the offensive tradition at BYU better than Coach Reynolds does. And he made the comment to me that if you look back at those years, that BYU was 50-50, and that's why they were so successful. They always had great running backs who could get the job done, get the tough yardage. They've always had a big offensive line who can control the line of scrimmage and move the football on the ground, and that is what opens up the passing game. And so I think we need to, you know, kind of rein in our emotions here with the great things that we've got going on in the passing game and remember that football is built around the run. It's very easy to defend a team if you can take away the run. And that's why one of BYU's pillars is, you know, 100 yards of rushing a game for both the offense and the defense. Our offense knows that if they can rush for over 100 yards a game, then they can control the game. And more often than not, we're going to win. And same thing for our defense. They know that if they can hold the other team to less than 100 yards rushing, then more often than not, they're going to win the game. And the proof is in the pudding this year. If you look at the games that we won, Washington, we rushed for 146 yards. San Diego State, 271. Wyoming, 217. UNLV, 216. Colorado State, 284. New Mexico, 258 yards. Now you go back and you look at the games we lost. With the exception of Air Force, where we rushed for 221 yards, you go back and look at Florida State, we rushed for 76. Nevada, we rushed for 91. Utah State, we rushed for 65. TCU, we rushed for 56. Utah, we rushed for 65. So you can see that the formula works. The goals that Coach Menhall has put in place for these guys, they work, and there's a lot of meaning to them. And so to go ahead and jump on the bandwagon that, you know, for BYU to be successful, we have to be Chuck happy and just throw the ball all over the place, that's not how it works. That's not how it worked when John Beck was a quarterback. That's not how it worked when Max Hall was a quarterback. I mean, you got to think that with John Beck and Max Hall, two of the winningest quarterbacks in BYU's history, and guys that have thrown for you know, some of the most yards in BYU history, they also each played with two running backs who, in their separate careers, were the all-time rushing leaders at BYU. He encouraged Brown and then Harvey Unga. So that's why I don't buy the comments that, you know, people throw out there that BYU is a passing school and the tradition is a passing offense. There is. You know, Coach Edwards and his staff, they revamped and they brought some new things to college football at the passing game, but it was all built about around the ability to run the football. And without the ability to run the football, it doesn't matter who you have at quarterback. You know, you're just not going to be successful. And this year we were lucky enough to have a great core of running backs who kind of, for a minute there, you know, put the team on their shoulders and carried the load. And it really excites me for next year that we're going to have J.J. and Brian and Joshua Quezada back. And, you know, these guys are going to be a great boost to the offense next year. And then you look at the receiving core that's coming back. We've got Jake Heaps, who is growing with every game and is becoming more and more impressive. He's learning to put some more touch on the ball. The receivers are getting more accustomed to how hard he throws, probably soften up their hands a little bit. And, you know, you look at the progression that they made through the course of the year, where in the beginning of the year we looked at them and they weren't attacking the football in the air. You know, a lot more complaining, trying to draw calls on PIs. And you look at them at the end of the year, and they really put it on their shoulders to go up there and make plays. And we saw with Luke Ashworth in the Colorado State game, you know, he went up and he made plays, the same kinds of plays that he made his freshman year as a true freshman for his mission. And the result of that was he got 4.5 touchdowns. And the guy who's impressed me from day one this year has been Cody Hoffman. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to see that the guy's a monster. He's 6'4". I don't know what he is. He's listed at, you know, something like 215. The guy's got to be around 225. He's got great speed. He's strong. I mean, this is a guy that I'm really excited to watch play because he's going to be a force down the field. There's not going to be any little DBs that are going to be able to not only out-jump him but take the ball out of his hands the better he gets and the more experience he gets under his belt. Another guy I really liked that I thought we missed at the latter part of the year was Marcus Matthews. There's been some talk about moving him to tight end. I hope that he stays as a wide receiver. I think the guy's a great, tall, long, down-the-middle threat. I don't think he's going to outrun too many people, but he made a lot of great catches, and I think he's a great, big, tall target. McKay Jacobson, I love McKay. Had a chance to play with McKay before his mission and know what he can do, and I know it was a little frustrating year for him for a lot of reasons, but you know what? He's a guy that's going to come back next year as a senior, and you know I really expect him to dominate. He's a guy that's going to stretch the field. He's got great hands, and I think the more that he and Jake get to work together, the more they're going to build a great synergy and be able to make a lot of good things happen next year. Our tight ends, you know, they were all young, but they're going to also get better with time as well, and I'm excited for that. I'm excited to see Ross Oppo get in the mix next year. So in order to wrap this up, you know, I just want to throw it out there that, you know, for all those who didn't think I believe in Jake, those who are close to me know that I've always been a big fan of Jake right from the start. Just knew that, you know, he's a young kid, and I know what it's like to go from high school to college, and it's a bigger jump than the normal fan thinks it is. I think unless you've gone through it, you don't realize how different it is. And that's why a lot of guys who are really successful in high school aren't successful in college. And you see the same thing, you know, jumping from college to the NFL. Just weird things happen. You learn different systems. I mean, there's just a lot that goes into it, which is why I really wish that situation could have been better, that someone else could have stepped in as a starting quarterback this year, let Jake get acclimated to BYU's offense, to college football, and you know, learning the skills that Coach Dome is teaching him. He's got a great quarterback coach there that can really mold him. And you can see the progress that he made throughout the year under that coaching and tutelage and with the ability to learn more about the offense and get more comfortable with the system. And so I really look forward to great things from him in the future and want to congratulate him on really progressing throughout the year and finishing off on a high note. You know, you could say that Utah game, we didn't come out to win, but that was definitely our best offensive game of the year, I think. You look at the defense that we went against, far better than, you know, I should say the only defenses that are probably better than them We're TCU, obviously, Florida State, and you know, possibly San Diego State at times. The way San Diego State's playing later in the year, but you know, they're still getting up a lot of points. So I would say that Utah, the only defense is better than Utah that were on BYU's schedule, were Florida State and TCU. And you know, obviously, we didn't win any of those games, but our offense played really well against a good defense in Utah, and Jake Heaps was a big part of that. So here's to a big bowl game. You know, it's not going to be as big as the Vegas Bowl, which is a bummer. But, you know, here's to the team getting better, getting more experience, get those young guys an opportunity to have a few more weeks of practice before we celebrate the holidays. Hope you enjoyed the first podcast and look forward to more to come.